Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to our podcast on CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Brady and this is Celtic Underground number 260. Regular visitors to the site will know that I have been writing a few things recently connected with the finances of Scottish football. As part of that, I wrote a piece on the Resolution 12 proposal and what it entailed. In that, I wrote about how I'm not really interested in Rangers, who, just for the record, lost 3-1 to St Johnstone tonight. And as I pointed out on Twitter, I could never understand why the press were getting excited, because they did what they did, what they've done before with that team. Is they have forgotten that they're playing in a much lesser quality competition. We thumped Dundee on Sunday, and Dundee are better than every team that Rangers will play this season, and we didn't get carried away by thumping Dundee. It was an excellent game and an excellent result and an excellent performance in Celtic, but we didn't suddenly start calling ourselves Barcelona as some of the Rangers fans of the new club are doing, and certainly some of the press were getting carried with. Anyway, tonight was the most that I paid attention to a Rangers game this season. I was walking the dog and listened to 40 minutes of it and came in and watched the last 5 minutes of it. And because I'm not really interested in, they're not in our league literally, and they're not in our league figuratively, so they're just not, it's not, they're not relevant. However, what is relevant is that you and I watched our team being cheated while another team decided to use money that should have gone to the taxpayer to try and fund their team to compete with us on the football pitch. And as someone with a moral compass, I believe in the principles of right and wrong, and I believe that wrongs should be punished appropriately, and the wrongs of Rangers have never been punished. I mean, obviously the crook of David Murray has bigger wrongs than just Rangers, and namely in the £1 billion that he walked away from at HBOS. But the grand scheme of things, that's a vile club who propagated a sectarian signing policy and nobody did anything. And shortly after they get rid of their sectarian signing policy, they then promoted a tax evading strategy to try and compete with us. And you know what? Karma's shit, man, isn't it? Because they then went bust. However, I'd still like the SFA to acknowledge their part in that, and that's what the whole Resolution 12 is about. So although I wrote a piece, I'm no expert about it, I decided to get Aldhead on, because Aldhead is one of the 4 guys behind the requisition of Resolution 12 at the Celtic AGM of 2 years ago. And if you don't know what Resolution 12 is all about, Aldhead explains that right at the beginning. So I got on somebody who knows more about it than me, so I'm not going to try and explain that pre-podcast. Enough to say, this is me, Harry Brady, with him, Aldhead. It's just like watching the detectives. Watching the detectives. But just before I did the introduction, I thought, actually, I'm referring to Res 12 as if absolutely every single person on the planet knows what Res 12 means. So, first of all, for those who don't attend Celtic AGMs, what is Res 12?
Right, it's quite straightforward. It just asks Celtic to go to UEFA and ask the UEFA Club Financial Control Body, who, according to their booklet, said powers, investigatory powers, to look into how the licence was awarded or kept by Rangers back in 2011. As everybody knows, there was great interest in it, and it was adjourned. Mm-hmm. And at the time, the official Celtic answer on that was it wasn't necessary. You know, in the words it says, it's not necessary. And the reason Celtic took that position is they explained to us after, you know, in the run-up to that AGM, was that they had made inquiries of the SFA in 2011, late on, I think, December. I'm going through memory here, Brian, so yeah. I'm not quite writing the dates out. But they'd asked the SFA, and basically the SFA had come back and took the line and says, look, at the time we were granted a licence, you know, but the ball hadn't arrived. So it couldn't be overdue because it hadn't arrived. And you can't argue with that. Mm-hmm. So it was accepted as such. But as you pointed out in your article, that year UEFA introduced the stages. Yeah. You know? So at the 30th of June, clubs had to confirm again that they'd no overdues payable. And we pointed that out. Basically, we said, I said, hey, you know, it's not Article 50, it's Article 66. Oh, wait a minute, we'll check that out. So the SFA sort of response in articles to Article 66 point in their monitoring responsibilities. And Stuart Regan went on to BBC and said this to Richard Gordon and says, look, after we've granted a licence, there's nothing more to do with us, right? So we then had a look at the rules and we said, well, actually, that's not quite the case. You have got a monitoring responsibility and there's certain things in, you know, included in that. And there's a, you know, there's a responsibility to check that the position at June, you know, is still the same as the stated position in March, right? And what we've seen and what we want to Celtic with, and here was the point, after we had pointed out to Celtic, the adjournment came up because, see, clearly there's an awful lot more than this because the rules are complicated. You touch into the legal aspect as well, and it was going to take a wee bit of time to work it through. And there was also a question of joining dots. But when you don't have all the information, you sometimes join the dots in the wrong way. So there was a bit of clarification needed on it. And we started off with a sort of timeline that suggested there's something not right here, right? And over the period of time, we tightened that timeline up. Now, a question that some people are saying is, you know, why are Celtic not running this? Well, they've got a responsibility to shareholders. And what they have done is, they've, as far as I'm concerned, I think the other lads involved in the agreements, they've met that responsibility. They've not fobbed us off. They've listened to our points. They've looked at what we've put to them. And meeting that responsibility towards shareholders, they've gone that road. So with that, we were able to go back and make the what was originally a timeline firmer and firmer until we're convinced that it was an overdue payable. And we got a tax expert, somebody who, you know, was a tax consultant, to look at the documentation, the tax bill, when it arrived, what the conditions were for it, and what have you that. And it was overdue at the point in June, you know. And it should have been declared as such. And had it been declared as such, which Malaga did the following year, then here's an interesting thing. One of the things that UEFA did with Malaga, having been told we've got an overdue payable, but we're talking to the tax man about it, which is basically the line Malaga took. They said, right, under the rules, we want to get we want to get future financial forecasts, right? So this is remember, this would have been in September 2011. And at the same time...
To remind people, Rangers went bust on Valentine's Day 2012.
Well, right, so 5, 6, 7 months later, Rangers go bust. Now, had that information come up, UEFA would have been going back and says, we want to see your future financial forecasts. And what they would have seen was, unless they had the Champions League money, they were going to go bust. Right? You know. So there was a number of things there. The people at Rangers obviously wouldn't want to reveal the fact that they'd need money at that point in time. You know. Other people, and you can guess who the other people might not want that to be sort of come public knowledge either. So it was an awful lot of people's interest, you know, for just to, you know, just bury this. And as you pointed out in the in your article about the attempts to, if you like, airbrush it for history, or at least put it into a different shelf in history, be holding back the accounts from March into the 1st of April. And that got me smelling a rat at the time. You know, I tend to do that, but wait a minute, that's, you know, that's why are they doing that? Because that gets them by the 31st of March, you know. So myself, I thought, there's more to this than meets the eye. And then what I also remember was on listening to phone-ins and that, the defence always was, it hasn't crystallised, you know. And that has always been the justification. But of course, what we're saying is, well, look, mate, it did crystallise. It crystallised in the middle of June. It was an overdue payable. None of the conditions which you've set out in your article for meeting it, they apply. There was an attempt to get something that would have got it passed, but it was after the checkpoint date. And that agreement was quickly unravelled by HMRC when Rangers bought Lee Wallace. You know, and there's another interesting angle. Had Rangers beat Malmo with Lee Wallace and the team, and had this, the tax people turned up on the 10th of August, 7 or 8 days after Malmo had gone out the cup, the Swedes would have been passing a resolution 12. Right? You know, and saying, hang on a minute, what's going on here? So that's the sort of, if you like, the background to you know, how we sort of, if you like, we knew something wasn't quite right. How it got to the AGM stage, why it was adjourned, what's happened since, and now where we are, or can come to where we are now, which is We wrote to the SFA, the shareholders' representative wrote to the SFA. We had a difficulty in the sense of who do you reply back to, and we more or less got what we expected, and we only wrote to the SFA ourselves because up to that point, we had a great deal of difficulty finding a lawyer who could represent us, mm-hmm. because the case that we wanted to take, they'd already gone to a QC who'd looked at it and says, that's pretty solid, but he couldn't take it forward right. under the rules. You need solicitors to do that. So it took us a bit of time, you know, and one of the lads, and there's four who's been involved in this, and everybody's put in, it's like a lemmings game where everybody's doing their bit. You know, somebody's yeah. hacking, somebody's digging, somebody's running, somebody's battering. There's that sort of team effort being on in it. So one of the guys, we couldn't get the lawyer at the time, but time was passing and we really wanted to go back to, you know, to put this the questions that are in the letter to the SFA, because we suspect we know the answers to most of them. But we're quite prepared to be wrong, and we would, when I say love to, actually what I would love to, I'd love the whole thing to be finished. But what we would love to hear is something that says, actually guys, you are wrong and this is why you're wrong. But we've never ever had anything like that back at any point, and neither has anybody who has ever asked the questions of the SFA. They've been told about the 31st of March, they've never been told about the 30th of June, and the questions have not been fully honest in the sense that they've only answered part of the, you know, part of it, but they've not really addressed the issue. Did, you know, were the rules observed? Did Rangers keep the licence as they should have done?
So Rangers were due to submit their accounts on the 31st of March
Aye.
Of 2011.
Yeah.
And they needed to do that to fulfil their AIM obligations, their AIM listing, because that was their financial year end.
I'll take your word for that. You know more about that than
I do. There was 2 dates and the SFA. And for those people who've not read this, the article I put on the site, and in memory of these events starts to become a bit vague, the next day, the 1st of April, was the famous £10,000 gorilla in the room comment from Alistair Johnson, when there was also a bit of a diversionary tactic with that Hull boy who's on our site, always makes the point. It was also the first time you talked about crystallisation. That was the first time anybody had heard about the wee tax case.
Aye, that's right.
So they actually did have a crystallised outstanding amount because they said, we owe this money and we accept that.
They had accepted the liability for it before the end of March. The reason they accepted the liability for it is interesting. Right. The reason they accepted liability is they wanted to fight it, and they went to their QC for advice. And the QC looked at it and they said, look, looking at the paperwork, and I think something to do with the sums involved, and the fact that HMRC wrote to you back in 2005 and you told them you couldn't find the side letters, and they certainly found the side letters, tells me that you knew what was going on. The tax system that you use, the discount option scheme, has already been declared an unlawful scheme because Aberdeen Assets Management used it. Mm-hmm. And that was, and the HMRC challenged them in their use, and the HMRC's challenge was upheld mm-hmm. by an FDT and by a subsequent UTT. So there's no doubt that those LEBTs were unlawful.
Yeah.
Lord Nimmo Smith uses the terms like unlawful and not irregular, you know, and then we get illegal. But all of them are all wrong. Really, if it's unlawful, irregular, or, you know, that, it's evasion.
Yeah.
If it's not unlawful, that, it's avoidance.
Yeah, it's not following the laws, so the...
Yeah.
Evaded the law.
It's in that sense, they evaded the law. So where did I get to there?
No, so they knew.
Mm-hmm. So they knew the liability existed. And the point I was making there was that the advice for the QC was, hey, come on, you know, they've asked you if you had them and you've said no. There's no question it had been an administration error, you know, for 10 years. Back then, they were like, ah, wait a minute, we're not so sure about this. So that information was there. Somebody arranges to those files and somebody sees the letters weren't in them. Right? So that happened back in 2005. So that wee tax case was always there. But it took until 2010 with Aberdeen Asset Management case being ran by HMRC. That was that ended October 2010. And in the back of that, HMRC says, okay guys, we've got you here. That was an illegal and an unlawful scheme. You owe us money. Now, they couldn't have actually have asked them, said you owe us money, because it was 6 years out of the past the time frame.
Yeah.
However, because they says, when we asked you about it in 2005 and you didn't tell us the truth, under Regulation 80 or whatever it was, we can now go back and chase you for that money, even though it goes back to 2002-03. Right. So that was the significance of that. And the advice of the Rangers was, you need to cough for it.
Mm-hmm.
And they did. Right? And that happened before the 31st of March. It happened about a week before.
But they tell everybody on the 1st of April.
I can't even remember what they told you. You've picked up on that bit, so, you know, I'm
well,
not passing the buttons to my
memories. It's Hullboy that always makes the point of, actually, they were in breach of SFA rules and UEFA rules on the licensing.
Aye.
Because of the wee tax case. But to stop people picking that up,
aye,
Alistair Johnson mentions the £10,000 gorilla in the room,
aye,
of the potential £40 million plus liability of the outstanding EBTs.
Actually, I smile a bit because even in the days of RTC, I kept banging on it with the wee tax case and saying, this is the one. And see, nowadays, I begin to wonder whether I've lost the plot entirely. You know,
no, but it is the one because it doesn't matter. You have to have outstanding payables.
You have to have outstanding payables. And the thing with the wee tax case is it involves side letters as well.
Yeah.
Right? It was a trust. That touches on the Nimmo Smith stuff. Cut me later if you want. But, that the point was that those particular ones, those payments, that was the original scheme. Interestingly, what I don't know is why Rangers decided to move for that scheme to the scheme that's now under dispute.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody somewhere must have sort of said, wait a minute, you know.
Well, like somebody said, I'm really not sure about that.
Aye.
But if you're having to continue this robbing the taxpayer to pay people's wages, aye, this is a better way
to do it. This is a safer way to do it, right? Yeah. And it may turn out to be a safer way to do it up to a point. But if I can go back a bit as well, was it when Rangers, embarked on the EBT scheme? It was at a remuneration policy meeting, so it was. Campbell Ogilvie was there, you know, and it was him that actually got the first one off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that first one was for Moore, and I don't even know if there was a side letter there. In fact, I don't think...
So just to clarify Campbell Ogilvie, who was on boards of the SFA, Campbell Ogilvie...
In 1999, he wasn't, but he subsequently was later.
Subsequently was later,
you know.
So somebody senior in the SFA was wholly aware that one of the member clubs was having dubious tax systems.
Well, he's the policy committee meeting that decided to use EBTs as a matter of remuneration policy.
I'm just firming up that there can't be a lack of knowledge at the SFA. Either somebody's had their brain wiped or they knew.
Aye. Well, he sat there and he subsequently said, I'd nothing, you know, I'd know. And the thing is, what he could say truthfully was, he'd no further part after that in the administration of them, because that then passed to somebody else, you know. Well, as far as I know, you know, taking them at his word.
But in 1999, did they have side letters?
This is the point. In 2000, it was the first side letter, right? The Craigmuir, I don't think there was, because HMRC never found one. And the fact is that Craigmuir was never billed for the tax on that. He was billed for tax on the big tax case because he got paid under that EBT later, right? But he didn't get billed on that. You know, it was only the other two. And the conclusion I reached from that is that they definitely had the letters for the other two, Float and De Boer, but not the one in White, so in Muir, so they couldn't pursue that one.
Right.
So that was, if you like, so... It could be that even, and to be fair to Ogilvie, it could be the very first one he set up was honestly done, even if the scheme itself turned out to be...
It was honestly done as an avoidance scheme based on advice rather than a deliberate
advice. I don't know if there's a side letter there. What I don't know is whether that payment was registered with the SFA. Right? You know, that's the other side of it, was, you know, were the SFA told that Craigmuir was being paid whatever it was he was getting paid? I can't remember whether it was a signing on fee, because Palace was it, and if he was coming back, so I don't know if it was a golden handshake arrival, you know, it certainly was a departure, but whatever, that first one that Ogilvie was in, to be fair to him, I think we have to be sort of, you know, be careful
from what
in
we
that
know,
sense
that he's certainly been done,
he's on the policy remuneration committee, so he couldn't have been any doubt that Rangers' use of EBTs was a matter of, would you call it, policy?
Mm-hmm.
Ibrox, right? And he, I better be careful in the sense of conjecture. If he's sitting in a policy meeting and he's told us that they're using, he must have been given some idea, given his role in the club. I think it was secretary or something like that.
Yeah.
He must have had some idea about what was involved in this. And if you like, where to be careful and what we could do and what we couldn't do.
Well,
one of the things he could have said is, by the way, you can't decide letters on this because that's going to breach it and cause us problems.
Anybody listening to this who has ever been at a board meeting of a company would know if you are implementing some form of remuneration or payment strategy to staff that didn't sound spot on,
aye,
the board would grill the executives to death,
aye,
on that.
Aye.
And possibly there would be an accompanying report,
aye,
to justify it, and you might even request the expert advisor who's advised the company on it to compile a report or to attend the board meeting, yeah, to justify something that was clearly on the edge of,
yeah,
legitimacy.
And Ogilvy said in his defence much later that he wishes he probably had been more rigorous at that time. And
so is he just an incompetent director?
Well, the person that was driving it was David Murray, Sir David Murray. Right? You know, so you're sitting on a board and he's sitting at the top table and he's a guy that holds everything.
To be fair, he's a real tale I've heard from the world of business about, aye, David Murray. Aye. He had a 5-minute egg timer,
aye,
at every board meeting,
mm-hmm,
and every topic. If it couldn't be resolved within 5 minutes, move on.
Aye.
And many people, whatever tier of level they've, yeah, worked in at work, aye, may have come across an environment where it wasn't a great idea for you to question, yeah, people in authority.
No, and in that sense, I might have been, I don't know if intimidation is the right word, but I've said it, but it might have been just, not feel like deliberate intimidation, but the whole setup as such, and that's why I'm sort of holding back a wee bit and saying, you don't know,
yeah,
what the other person's shoes, you don't know what the circumstances were like at the time. But the fact of the matter is, when they embarked on that, the last president of the SFA, was there at the time, and he subsequently, of course, was a beneficiary of the ones that they moved on to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's things like that are, you know, the general public aren't aware of, and you know, probably say, so what, it doesn't matter. But then when you find yourself in the position in the SFA in 2011, where you're the president, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you become president 5 or 6 days before the verification process.
Yeah,
of the UEFA license comes in, you know. You begin to think, I wonder if he did know at that point in time, and that's really some of the questions he asked. Did he know at that point in time the basis for the wee tax case and why it was being pursued? Did he, you know, and did he say, "Well, why don't you find out about that?" Because you know, there's obviously something.
Given him the benefit of the doubt that the Moor,
aye,
one was done correctly,
aye,
with no side letter,
aye,
and you'd been the person who'd started that policy,
aye, aye,
surely when you then hear that subsequent uses of the same policy,
aye,
have fallen foul,
mm-hmm,
of HMRC,
aye,
would there not be a part of you that would then try and question, wait a minute, I set that process up, aye, when I was there, everything was fine when I left.
But was he still there at the point in time when HMRC started asking questions? Because remember, he left Rangers.
No, but I'm talking about when he was at the SFA. If you're still within an industry and, in fact, have moved to a governance, a role of governance, and you hear something that you'd started up had fallen foul, it's human nature that you would want to make sure,
yeah,
first and foremost, that you hadn't started up something that was...
Aye.
Aye. Not legal.
I tried to use
Laudanum Smith.
Or at least, sort of said, "Hang on a minute." My role in that was, I'd nothing to do. I set it up, but there was no side letters involved. I wasn't involved in the administration of it. You know, the question really then is by the time came in 2011, was he aware that Rangers had accepted liability 3 or 4 months before for the tax bill? Did he know any of the sort of detail on it? And you know.
I'm just looking.
Those are the questions that should be asked. Nobody's ever asked them. That's
no, well, purely practical perspective. If we were all in that situation, the least we would do is make an informal inquiry. You'd go back, speak to somebody, not through official channels, back at Rangers and say, wait a minute, I set that up.
Aye.
Is there anything going to come back on me on this? Aye. No, don't worry, because they changed it after,
aye,
you left.
Aye.
And they stuck it, started... Right, well, so I'm okay then.
Yeah.
You'd at the very least make those types of informal inquiries.
Yeah. The only difficulty that he has is that when he gave his testimony to the Lord Nimmo Smith Commission, he never touched on the wee tax case stuff at all. And when the decision came out, as far as I know, there was never any comment. And in the Nimmo Smith decision, what Nimmo Smith does, he recognised that there was early BTs, but he said we'll treat them as continuous, right? Which basically meant that we'll treat them all the same. And the whole Nimmo Smith decision is predicated on EBTs being lawful.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the majority may actually be lawful if, you know, if HMRC lose the case or lose it ultimately, like that. There's no doubt at all that the early ones weren't lawful.
No, they weren't.
Now, in that sense, Nimmo Smith's decision said it didn't stand. And he also made a statement, there's no question of dishonesty. If you go back to 2005, now, the reason Nimmo Smith didn't know that is because the information that would have told them that Harper McLeod, the lawyers, asked the administrators at Rangers in 2012 to provide, that information wasn't provided. So Nimmo Smith was blindsided, the lawyers were blindsided. Right, you know, so Nimmo Smith's decision, it's a bit like, do you remember the...
It's a bit, for a much more serious level, yeah. It's a bit like the reason we're having a second Hillsborough inquiry, because the first Hillsborough inquiry presumed every single person was dead at 3:15.
Aye, it's...
And because nobody was allowed to give evidence that illustrated, so some of the testimonies that are coming out now with people talking at 3:30 and at 4:00 and people throwing up at 4:00. So no criticism of anybody happens because everybody died at 3:30.
That's a good analogy, actually, because I was trying to think of one on the way in, and it was the movie, and it was about, I think it was the Birmingham bombings where the guys were put in jail and the evidence was suppressed. It was a movie with Emma Thompson in it.
Yeah.
And eventually she found some of the suppressed evidence. And then I think it took ages before that suppressed evidence was actually admitted and then they get freed. But the analogy is the same as the one you just gave, and it's that one as well. You've actually come up and said, and that's all gone to them. You know, the lawyers have got that, the SPL have got it, the SFA have got it, and they're all sitting on it.
So if I
so we're digressing for Res 12 to a degree, but we were asking about side letters.
No, but that's fine. So Res 12, just to clarify, Rangers had to have no unpayable taxes declared by the 31st of March, and because they declared it 12 hours later, 1st of April, rules are rules, and the SFA...
Technically clear.
But 2011 was different because there was a second review on the 30th of June.
Aye.
And the gist of Res 12 is, so they cheated a bit and
they're technically clear, they're technically unclear.
Yes.
That's really what we're saying. It's technically, we want
by
to know...
By the 30th of June, if the SFA had done their job, Rangers would not have got a licence to play European football.
Well, no, it's not quite like that, yeah, right. To be precise. At the 30th of June, had the job been done properly and had the overdue payable been declared, UEFA then would have set a process in train, much as they did with Malmo the following year. Malaga. In Malaga the following year, it's interesting that case, looking at it, it tells you exactly what UEFA intended, which is we decide the dates, that's the dates where the overdue payable exists. If none of the conditions for excusing it apply, then you're in breach of one of the indicators. And a consequence of one of those indicators is we want future financial forecasts. Because don't forget, what UEFA were after as well, it wasn't they were trying to keep poor clean, they're trying to make sure that nobody went belly up during their competitions, right? So that was the sort of purpose there. Now, UEFA then had a number of sanctions open to them, and they weren't to throw Rangers out of the competition. It was a sanction that was available, right? They could have said, provide us with the future financial forecast, and having seen that, they might have said, oh no, that's fine. You're obviously operating in a proper level, and that money that's coming in is you're entitled to get that. Or they could have said, hang on a minute, you know, it seems to us that you've actually bought players with money that you should have paid for the taxpayer, and that's letting you into a competition that somebody else could have got into, you know, so I'm afraid that, you know, you're not going to get in. I mean, that's a bit of conjecture, but the rules allow that, right? So whilst people say, they don't necessarily, but until somebody actually goes and looks there and comes back and says, that they guys have got it wrong, this is what would have happened, or this is what happened. There would have been a point of review, thank you. That's exactly it. There would have been a point of review, and in a sense, Resolution 12 was actually saying, we think that there's something wrong back then, and we want to find out why there wasn't a point of review in July 2011, because a submission went in that basically prevented that. What we also know for the Malaga case is that Malaga said they had overdues payable, and UEFA said, hang on a minute, we want to know more. So the only thing you can conclude for that is that the submission that went in the year before in respect to Rangers couldn't have made the same statement. It must have made a statement that said that let UEFA say, this is okay. The question is, was that statement true?
Okay.
And if it wasn't true, and Rangers were then to benefit from that, as a shareholder, I'm basically saying, hang on a minute, that may have affected my share.
Well, so then getting to the point that people might throw back, and you've touched on it a bit, because the people and the entity that was suffered most from Rangers not having the rules properly applied is Celtic. Because there's a possibility
that
Celtic got European football ahead of Rangers.
Aye. And don't forget the club below that would have moved up the ladder. Right. No, I think that was Kilmarnock. There was some noise to do with cup wins and things like that. But I think it was Kilmarnock. I think we thought it was Dundee United, but because the cup, whoever, I think it won the cup year, whatever it was, it may be low. But there's consequences of that.
So then people...
Which gave locus to Resolution 12.
Yeah, and people might say, right, I understand the point you made, that Celtic raised it. You've done some more digging, and because of the nature of all the other stuff that goes on around Rangers, more information has come out in time. Aye. You've raised Resolution 12 2 years ago. And then maybe some people say, Celtic are stringing you along. They asked the question of the SFA in 2011 and got a sufficient answer to make them go away.
Mm-hmm.
You've made Celtic have to do something, but Celtic are stringing you along because, hey, we're 2 years down the line. Surely Celtic should have taken this over from you.
Yeah. No, what happened there is that, in some ways it's hard to believe. When you actually look at it, it's hard to believe the story, right? As we started to unravel and get it, we were able to tighten up what was happening. Celtic were fully aware of their responsibilities to shareholders, right? And ultimately that's the case. They're not stringing me along. They're not stringing the other three guys along. They're stringing every shareholder in Celtic along if that's what they're doing. And they're not doing that. They're not that stupid. Right? Come on. How stupid do you think people are? They understand, they know the workings of things. They've got responsibility, shareholders. And basically, this is the sort of crucial point. We as shareholders have gone to the SFA. And as I said, we went ourselves in the first instance and we get told we're not, basically, who are you guys, who are these people? And the thing about it is, the SFA already knew who we were because Celtic had approached them the year before with their concerns and taking them to them, right? And one of the things I have to say to answer that point, see the time between the year before and us getting back about 10 months later, that had nothing to do with Celtic. That had to do with the fact that the four guys doing this on their own, what do you call it? We basically, no finance, using our connections, using our brains, trying to pull the whole thing together. That's why it took so long. So a lot of people I know what people do with vacuums, they fill them up whatever they want to believe, right? So whilst they'll fill the vacuum in St. Celtic, I said, we're stringing along. From the resolution being adjourned, right up until the following August, that'd be 2012, we were treated responsible shareholders by the club. And the club met the responsibilities to us in that respect. We couldn't go back and say, the string is along. Whatever we were being told that, as a result of the exchanges, the early exchanges at Celtic had been on, we were then able to take that next stage. When it reached a point, and there is a point there, some of the stuff that we'd gone to, and it's quite the important one, at the time, the stuff we'd gone to, we got it from the leaks that come out, right? And that was a problem because then Celtic couldn't handle any of that stuff, right? Totally, credible reason. They couldn't touch it. It was called the provenance issue. We found a way around that because what we discovered was that the tax kid documents and all the rest of it were represented to the court of sessions, as part of the process for the sheriff officers turning up. So we were able to sort of get at the actual tax bill itself. And then from that, we were able to start taking it on the line that we were taking before. So we have to be careful here because I'm aware even as I'm talking that people listening to this will be saying, these guys just want to get Rangers. I know it was Rangers was at fault, but that's gone. That's done. What I want to see happen is, and this is where it goes, is what about the people who enabled it to happen are still there in a position? And are we just going to, you know, if you like, carry on as if nothing actually happened there? There's breaches of rules. What's been done to stiffen up those rules? What new processes have been put in place? That's ultimately what this is about. You know.
Yeah, so what are you wanting to achieve out of Resolution 12?
What I'm hoping is that people put their hands up and say, and I've got lots of sympathy with the SFA and the position they found themselves in, right? Because football's an industry, a lot of people get employment out of it, a lot of people depend on the living for it, and they thought, oh, wait a minute, you know, this, you know, we can't allow this to happen the way it would if it had been great in another third Lanark. This could damage the industry greatly. And I've got sympathy with that. But the line I take it is at the end of the day, although it's a business, it's a sport, and sport depends on the belief that what you're watching out there in the field of play is one person playing another person, basically using the skills that they've got on the field of play to make it an even contest. Or if it's a team game, that the teams are all playing with the same rules. And that when you, the rules are there to give people that confidence that that's what's happening. If you start to bend the rules, as has happened, or break them, you know, and there's no doubt Rangers broke the rules back in 2011, you know, to get the, to keep the licence. But when the SFA then start to break the rules, and you're entering into five-way agreements, and you're entering into, if you like, not answering the questions that we've legitimately put to the shareholders in order to hold a line, I think you get to the point, and that's the point I'm getting at, but the next season I'm saying to myself, the game's crooked. What's the point of me putting money in here? Anyway, I know there's thousands of others who probably don't care at you, and they'll still turn up there, and they'll still moan when the referee doesn't give you a Stonewall penalty, and they'll still go home, and they'll still believe that I believe for the last 60 years that there's something working against us, you know. And I'll not be here that long for 60 years, but I tell you what, by the time I go, I know I tried a wee bit to try to change things.
So,
can I just rephrase that? I know. I'm speaking for the other guys as well, because right. I have to be, you know, I keep getting back, it's not just myself. I happen to have a look at the detail and stuff, but the other boys are in it too.
So from something you touched on there as well earlier, and you make the valid point, it's a point I know that a number of people have made. I've heard Paul Larkin make the point of, we paid money as season book holders to go and watch a game, which we subsequently found out, retrospectively found out was rigged. In favour of one team, financially, in favour of one team.
Yeah.
And of course, Lord Nemo Smith, and you've touched on this, and obviously this wasn't the purpose of getting you here, it was to talk about Res 12, but you touched on Lord Nemo Smith, and you obviously know the detail more than me. Lord Nemo Smith's remit was to find out whether they did get an unfair advantage, and he said they didn't.
Now, the reason he was able to say why they didn't get an unfair advantage was basically EBT schemes were open to everybody, and Rangers happened to use them. The fact that other clubs didn't use them, you know, is down to them. But, you know, there was no unfair advantage given by the fact that Rangers used EBTs. The registration issue was the one with Bryson, and that really annoys me because I used to run a team, an amateur team, and I had to make sure that my I's were dotted, my T's were crossed. And if, you know, if I put somebody in a ringer like that, then I would have expected the results to be overturned.
So remind people what Bryson did.
Well, Bryson basically said is that whilst the payments by EBTs weren't registered with the SFA, that just basically, that meant that until such times as that was brought to their attention, you know, then the registrations were okay. Even though the rule says you've got to give us everything, you know. So he sort of turned it and it said, in that Bryson interpretation, nobody argued against that, right? And you could end up in a cul-de-sac arguing against that. And that's, but I was going back to what I said before, going back to your analogy. Don't go down that cul-de-sac. The simple fact of the matter is, the Nemo Smith invested the, which, the terms of reference to Nemo Smith were dictated to belie what they were.
So Bryson said, in evidence to Nemo Smith, the fact that we didn't get the side letters is immaterial because we didn't know that we didn't get the side letters.
Aye.
So until we knew that we didn't get the side letters,
they were eligible to play.
They were eligible to play.
Aye.
Surely the obvious answer of that is, but now you do know, so in retrospect, in the same way that HMRC can retrospectively find people, in retrospect, every single, because Rangers knew what they were at,
aye,
Dixon is the main guy. Andrew Dixon is the main guy.
He's their expert in rules and all that.
Yeah, so either Andrew Dixon's a complete incompetent who mm-hmm. should be barred from football, or he was at it, and every Rangers game with an irregularly registered player should be a 3-0 deficit.
Well, there's...
Or 3-0 defeat, I should say.
That's the thing that everybody expected to happen, right? What the Lionel Smith Commission was able to say is, no, that's not going to happen because that's the interpretation SFA have given. Nobody challenged that. And there's a reason why they didn't challenge it. Nobody disallowed to sort away tables. And honestly, my point about this is I really don't care about that stuff. I just want to know the next time I go to watch a game, it's an honest game. That stuff in the past, I would happily let them keep all the titles in the world as long as I saw reform. Right? Not, I don't expect everybody to agree with me, but I'm a great one for forgive. You know, don't forget, but forgive and let's move on. They can't live in that past. And that's the, you know, that's the danger, you know, the danger as I see it, is we'll end up repeating ourselves. We'll end up back in exactly the same, if you like, chasing Champions League money, going bust to get it. That kind of scenario, circus, will repeat itself. And if I can go into another bit on that, my hobby horse there, about the media. The media depend on that, or a part of them depend on that. And some of the stuff I've been telling you, it's not just, I've been giving that to media people. And some have actually, most of them have just rubber-eared it. But the ones that have looked at it, I've come back and says, oh, you might have a case. This isn't Neville Smith.
Mm-hmm.
None of them is going to publish that. Right? And UEFA license one, that is, we're pursuing that the way we're pursuing it.
See, the UEFA license one in some ways sounds more, I know how press people work. Everything's, particularly tabloids, which the majority of our stuff, I had Tom English in here, and he talked about there's more coverage of Scottish football than there's ever been. And my counter to that was, but it's quantity, not quality.
Aye.
You know, if you look at Celtic playing Ajax, the back page headline will be, Celtic get a draw, but Izzy Gueye gets sent off, and there'll be a giant picture and three paragraphs. You'll go to an inside spread, which will be a match report, which will say the game, and it'll be big pictures, and it'll say the game changed because of Izzy Gueye getting sent off. And then you turn the next page, and there'll be some editorial piece saying Izzy Gueye should have known better and get sent off. So it looks like we've got four pages of coverage, but it's actually not. And I understand that the UEFA license thing is complicated. But surely the Bryson they played with ineligible players is a really straightforward thing to say that somebody in the SFA deliberately lied to either just smooth over the past or to hide their incompetence to not know that Rangers had signed letters when they... when people in the SFA knew they had said like...
Well, the SFA, what do you call it? How much the SFA knew about the side letters and from when, you don't know, because the argument Rangers put was, oh, we declared them back in the accounts back to 2002, 2003. And going back to, if you like, a reformed SFA, which is much more professional, because the game now is big business. So it needs to be run as a big business would be run professionally. Right, mm-hmm. And it clearly isn't, because if it had been, we wouldn't have been in the mess we're in. But if you'd had that, when somebody at SFA says, well, those EBTs in 2002 and got an explanation, and they would have said, and how did it work? And if they'd said, well, this is what we do and we've got an agreement, and the players accept that, players accept the fact that we'll pay money to somebody else and they'll get it later. You know, come on, you must have something else. They'll actually have got side letters. You know, you better check the HMRC. Had there been proper governance in place back in 2002-03, it would have picked that up.
And but what you're saying is, Bryson says, so you've got two conflicting propositions on this, oppositions on it. You've got Bryson says, we didn't know that they were illegally registering players because we didn't know about the side letters. So until we knew about the side letters, we couldn't say that they were illegally registered. And you get Rangers saying, well, I don't know why you didn't know, because we've been telling you.
Well, that's true.
So one of the two of them lie.
The whole thing about that part of it, the Bryson interpretation, as I said, going back to my understanding when I had football teams, and I sat in referees committees and all the different things like that we did at amateur level. But my understanding was that, was I thought, wait a minute, it's a matter of if your team sheets have got a problem in them, or you're playing a ringer, or you're playing a player that's broken the rules, that game is null and void. That was the case. That Bryson interpretation, it was one that suited what I think. And this is the point. If you actually look at Nimmo Smith Commission again, it was set up to produce the result it was set up to produce, which is basically, we don't know that EBTs are unlawful. All we're looking about here is whether players should have been registered or not. That information should have been registered, and whether in fact there's an impact for that, right? Had they got the information that the early EBTs were illegal, they couldn't have actually commissioned it on that basis. They'd had to have said something like, hang on a minute, they were using a tax system that wasn't open to other clubs. You know.
Now, because that's the point, five of the EBTs have been found.
Aye, now see those five EBTs, that's come up before, I'd be looking at that. Those five EBTs were actually, if you like, bonus payments at the end of contract, right? And whilst you could turn in and say, what do you call it? Yeah, those were illegal payments, and you could argue the same thing in regard to the VTAC case. The difference with the two in the VTAC case is these were signing on arrangements.
Right.
These were part of the arrangements to make sure that Flo and De Boer joined Rangers. Uh-huh. This is how Rangers could afford to get them, is because they were avoiding paying the tax that they should have avoided, and they were avoiding it or evading it, and as it turned out, illegally. So there's no doubt about it.
But then I can remember Billy Dodds and his, I can't remember if his was one of the illegal ones or not, but I can remember Billy Dodds from Radio Scotland saying he still had X amount of his contract still to be paid. By Rangers.
Aye.
And what they did was they agreed to roll it up into a payment that was a tax-free payment at the end that would allow him to leave.
Aye.
So it's still a contractual arrangement that allows them to do stuff with a police squad.
Yes, and if we started going down that road, then it'd become even more complicated. But I take the point and the principle you're making.
So what we've established from this conversation is Rangers and the SFA, one of them has provided not correct information.
Yeah.
In relation to side letters.
Yeah.
And Rangers and the SFA, one or both of them, did not follow the rules in relation to the non-payable tax,
which is
to get Rangers
what your article was
on it. So we've got two bits of fault that the SFA were in. So I suppose question number one, again, people might come back and say, right, okay, but where's the authoritative voice of Celtic saying there's clearly either a club breached the rules and you let them do it, or you just turned a blind eye to it? Where's Celtic's statement on that? And secondly, as shareholders, now you've articulated why, but it's really got to be a shareholder driven thing. Well, as shareholders driving it forward, how are the SFA dealing with you? The SFA saying to you, we only deal with the clubs. What's your interest?
What the SFA are basically saying is that, look, we're only dealing with the clubs. And one of the reasons why we don't want it to do that is if you start doing that, one, they'll start to say, well, this is all football rules that come in, and they'll start to say, we can't answer this because of this football rule, because of that football rule. We're not talking here about football rules. What we're talking about is potential, you know, if you like, fraud, in the sense that the statement that was made back that year in order to keep the licence could potentially have deprived Celtic shareholders of money, or Celtic of money, if you want to say it like that. Celtic might have some difficulty in pushing that case because they're part and parcel of the actual whole association, and you kind of take your own association to court and stuff like that, right?
So that to me, that's a crux of it.
Aye.
Celtic can't take their own association to court.
But we guys, we think we might be able to. We're not absolutely certain, but we're pushing in that line. And if it comes to the bit, right, what we might end up having to do is to go out to the support with what I'm talking to you about now and say, look guys, we think we've got a pretty solid case. We can't fund this. We're going to need funding. And we've already got a promise of one or two bits of funding. So
that was the point I was going to make when you were talking about the four of us and doing it our own time.
Aye.
Do you think now is the time, bearing in mind that we are a month or so away from the second year anniversary of the resolution, do you think you're now at a time to perhaps, to use the phrase we've used a couple of times, crystallise the position that you've raised and go to the support and say, we need a crowdsourced funding of this to take it to the next stage?
But see, if I can come in here, there's actually quite an important point here as well. As I'm aware, this is Celtic Underground and we're Celtic supporters, we're talking about it. I post quite a lot in the Scottish Football Monitor, right? And the reason I post there is I believe it's the game I'm interested in as well. It's not just Celtic part, it's, you know, the Celtic part. It's the game as a whole. And I've posted quite extensively on that. And Scottish Football Monitor is there, as if you like to look at the media and look at the SFA and look at how they behave. And What I don't want to happen for this to become a Celtic support issue. I want this to become a Scottish football support issue, and I include the Rangers supporters in this, because if we had an SFA that was professional and up to snuff, fit and proper person rules would be proper rules. I was re-watching an interview Alec Thompson had with Hugh Adams, ABB Stuart Regan, and Regan said something about, we go to the club and the club says they're fit and proper, and Alec Thompson basically said, that's not governance. And he's right. Mm-hmm. It's not governance. What we've actually realised as we've dug into this is there's no governance at all. There's a semblance. There's a sham. There's an illusion of governance. And I say this to people, I say, see if you were actually trying to put the football authority structures into a graph. Not only you got a triangle, but you got a guy at the top and people below them, right? Yeah. I said to them, uh-huh. You try that with the SFA and the SBL and you got a Mobius strip, right? You know, where you go round about, but nobody's in charge. Williams come out as a matter of record in interviews with Thompson as well, saying, that's not our job. We're an umbrella organisation. We don't do this and we don't do that, you know. So, It's the real thrust of this one is for folk to sit down and have a look at that and say, those structures no longer. Henry McLeish did some work on it and sort of made various points, but I'm not even sure that in terms of the some of that from memory is still relevant to now. But I think things have moved on, and because of what's come.
Jim Farrey set up a commission.
Well, here's the point about this commission. This commission should have some government input into it. Right,
which is a question I was going to ask. Aye. If you're saying the SFA is not fit for purpose, aye, and the SFA at the moment is the clubs,
yeah,
and I've had some dealings with football clubs, and I now know why there's not a proper and robust fit and proper test, because we'd only have about six clubs that would be owned by anybody.
Yes, yeah, I believe that as well.
So, how do we change it? How do we make it fit for purpose?
Well, there's a couple of things. Getting back a number of years, and I'll bore you with it. One of the first things we were looking for from an open meeting was accountability and transparency at the SFA. Now, it's quite clear that there's no accountability in the sense of supporters don't have any means of getting answers. The very fact it's taken us 2 years of toil to even just get to the point we're officially getting told we're not going to answer you, even though we know you've got a case to answer, right, tells us that there's something totally wrong with the system. It shouldn't be like that. There should be somewhere that a supporter can go to and say, I've got a problem here, I'd like an answer, and I'd like an honest answer. I don't want an answer that suits them and suits the club. I want an answer that sort of satisfies me, I understand what's going on, and everything's been dealt above board. So there's no accountability at all. The SFA don't have to answer your letters, you know. If they don't like it, they just refuse. They're already doing that with us. They're saying, you know, we're refusing to answer you. We're looking for the answers, and we think we're entitled to get answers. Right? Mm-hmm. We recognise the difficulty in the sense of people saying Celtic today. We say, no, we think that if that happens, we'll end up being pushed on the outside again, and football will have lost the accountability. So it's not about, if you like, it's about looking for accountability, but it's not about Celtic looking for accountability. It's about Scottish football clubs and supporters looking for accountability. Fit and proper persons, I don't think the Rangers supporter that wouldn't agree with is that the rules need to be a damn sight more robust than what they've been, because we've let criminal elements, well, I don't know, but there's a case coming up, so I may be prejudging it, but it looks as if I've let some criminal element into the game.
The current owner's a criminal.
Well, there's that as well, right? You know, I've been dead careful there, right?
No, so we don't need to touch on
fit and proper, that the rules clearly don't work in a situation like that. And with the amount of money that's floating about in football, why government takes the stance that, oh no, we can't get involved because FIFA may intervene, or UEFA. FIFA, they're more corrupt than anybody at all. For a government to turn around and make an excuse that they can't intervene, and they have done, because I've written to them when Gretna went in Boston and said, our game's in real trouble. Are you guys looking at, oh, we can't touch that. If we do that, FIFA might get involved. Now, I think the whole world recognises now that FIFA don't have any standing at all, and to use them as an excuse for no then getting involved in, you know, making football. Because don't forget, it's supposed to be part of the social fabric of the nation, and I think it is. Mm-hmm. If it's part of the social fabric of the nation, then surely, goodness, governments get some interest to make sure that the glue that holds that together, which is the trust that's involved in it, is actually there. I cannot believe that the government hasn't made one statement in the respect of, we're not too happy about what's emerging here, right? I would love to see, an MP I don't care what party they are, you know, as long as it's not the Looney Greens, right? But any party at all, standing up and saying, we think that there's serious issues here that need to be examined. And we would like to set up a judicial review kind of thing to look at all of this and to come up with recommendations that will be implemented, that will make people, reassure people that we've got a proper, transparent, accountable and professional system of governance. You know, the professional bit, the football can do that itself. It can change it. And I wrote an article on this in the Underground. Mm-hmm. I've written quite a few in Trust in the Forum and that, been thinking about it. The means for doing that and changing the culture, this is based on my experiences, is you set up a service provider and a service user relationship. Mm-hmm. The SFA provide the service to football, the SPFL use the service. The service breaks down into licensing services, refereeing services, fit and proper person services, whatever it might be, and the SPL pay the SFA to deliver that, but to standards, mm-hmm. where they can say, wait a minute, that standard's not been met. That would immediately improve the standard of the refereeing. And if it was done the way it's done in the private sector, if, for example, the refereeing service wasn't up to scratch, you could then say, well, look, we don't need to take a referee for your pool, we can go and get a referee for the English pool, mm-hmm. and pay them. You know, that's the kind of thinking that needs to come into play now. Because if we don't, the game's dying up here anyway, and that's outside our control, because that's up to UEFA to look at the way the whole money's distributed in the game,
yeah.
and it's killing it, right? But within our own patch and what we can do something about, surely to goodness we can learn from the past mistakes, which have produced the results that we've got, and then build on that to put something in place that we can turn to the rest of the world and say, look, that's a really ethical way to run the game.
Mm-hmm.
Still commensurate with the commercial imperatives. But if the ethics don't underpin it, eventually, well, it might just be people like myself that will stop going. But eventually people think, that's just a corrupt setup. What's the point in investing myself emotionally or anything like that and start walking away? It's crazy to actually try to base your whole thing on falsehood.
But I suppose you're saying about it's the whole of Scottish football. But principally people, I think lots of people, even within Celtic supporters, see it as Celtic fans annoyed and they just want an excuse to strip titles off Rangers.
I've made my position on that quite clear. I can quite understand that, right, you know. But my position again is just a personal one. As I said, I'm quite a forgiving person. One of the articles I wrote for Celtic Underground, I remember in the bus, was about truth and reconciliation.
Uh-huh,
yeah. Right, remember that one, yeah. Right? I'll tell you something else as well. That is the events that end up with the Archbishop in Edinburgh, the one that has gone. They actually thought, oh, maybe there's something in that. But the advice was the timing wasn't right. Okay, I'll say no more than that. But in point of fact, in truth and reconciliation, was a sort of, that and forgiveness was a hobby horse of mine going way back. There's an American university sort of studies the whole subject and stuff like that. And I thought, quite a fascinating subject. So, what my view is I think wrongdoing's happened. Okay. I'm not excusing it, I'm not condoning it, but what I want is to move on from it. But in order to move on from it, and this is where the truth and reconciliation comes in, the truth needs to be there. Because you've got a lot of Rangers supporters are coming out and saying, this has happened to us, that's happened to us, that's happened to us. And you've got a lot of Celtic supporters saying, no, it's not. And one of the reasons for that is because the media, who they get their information from, are not telling them the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's afraid to actually not say, we made a huge cock up here. You know, we did at the time we did it, we didn't think it was that bad. It's only a game of football. We didn't realise it was going to turn into what it's turned into. So now that we do realise that, let's step back and have a good look.
And that was one of the points I was going to make. When you've got from my perspective,
aye.
There's a nonsensical line starting to come from Rangers fans that they were wronged. Because, in fact, I used this phrase to, I was discussing with a Hearts fan yesterday, and I said, you know, I'm beginning to think that Rangers fans now do understand the Catholic concept of a soul. a football club's this, it's like a soul.
Yes, I what is that?
And the body's been wronged, soul was wronged by the body that it sat within,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah,
it wasn't the soul that did the murdering, it was the bad body that was around it. And they seem to now believe in this ethereal concept that a football club just is a thing. Mm-hmm. It just exists,
yeah.
Out with any Corporate governance concept.
I think spiritually, yes, that's true. You know, I mean, I don't have a problem with that at all. If the boot was on the other foot, I would say exactly the same thing about Celtic, right? But what I wouldn't be happy about is if I'd known that we had done the things that we'd done, right, and actually got that truth. I wouldn't. In some ways, I'd be saying, I don't know if I want to keep that part of my history. Or at least I'm going to go and apologise to the other people.
Oh, it's a bit of a road in the sight.
So there's a whole...
You're probably the same as me from this perspective. Whilst I wouldn't necessarily have agreed with it, I think if they had just turned around and said, we did wrong and we're sorry.
Exactly.
Well, I know from people speaking to people in the SPL clubs, they probably would have won the vote to be in the SPL. I know that it was 3-2. It was 3-2, 3-2-8.
Aye.
Was the vote aye. Was going to be until they started the thuggery stuff
aye.
Of
aye.
Marching on Hampden.
Aye.
Who are these people?
I don't know before or after it, but you know, there was a great opportunity there for the game to clean itself up, and it was lost. I think it still exists.
Well, I was going to say, do you not think right this minute, or certainly coming up with an impending court case, which we can't talk about the detail of, but the principle that the Rangers fans now have of their soul being wronged by their body. Perhaps, getting back to your contact in government and contact politicians, they were quick to, and they say they can't interfere in football, but they summoned Peter Lawwell and Martin Bain.
Oh, why? When it suits them.
When it suited them for a photocall. Perhaps now, and maybe it's not the SNP, maybe it's a thing for the new Labour people, if not to use new and Labour in the same sentence at the moment, but it's perhaps something for the Labour people to get behind of.
I would have thought that create it was absolutely a forum of
the rights or wrongs. Celtic fans believed they were wronged. People, you as Celtic fans believed there was a wrong done then, and you got sufficient evidence to say you have a case.
Aye.
You Rangers fans believe that your soul was wronged.
Aye.
And you have a bit of a case.
Aye.
So do you know what?
Aye.
Rather than saying that you're right or wrong and you're right and wrong, the fact is you believe you've been wronged by a lack of appropriate governance.
Aye.
You believe you've been wronged by a lack of appropriate governance.
So.
And do you know what? Nobody's sticking their hand up and saying, no, we were righted by a lack of appropriate governance. So maybe there's a possibility now in the current environment of not your truth and reconciliation, not attributing the blame, but saying everybody sitting here saying there's a wrong.
That's the key to it, right? You accept that wrong things happen, but they ain't necessarily that people were out to do you wrong. Everybody justifies wrong by telling themselves it's right, you know. You know, that's basically human nature.
Yeah.
That's okay, I can do this. It's not that bad, it'll not affect anybody. So if you
it's really wrong because somebody's come up with a bad rule.
Well, that kind of thing. But that premise that you put, and I was smiling as you were putting, because that's exactly where I think the future, if there's going to be a future for the game. Because, I'll be honest, I dread next season if the team playing at Ibis, if they get up and they're playing some nice football just now, and and they come on the park and compete like that, they're great. But I just don't want to go back to, you know, one end of the park screaming hate at the other end of the park. Surely to God, in this day and age, we're past that. Well, you know, we need a more civil society. And I'm getting back to the media as well. What are they doing to promote a civil society in that respect? When they come on and they start talking about coming back, and when they ignore key issues like we're talking about tonight, about the moral dilemma and the moral aspect and the ethical aspects of that, what are they doing to if you like, encourage a society that recognises and respects the values behind that? Because it's those values that eventually end up into law, you know. So in that sense, what roles are the papers? Their sales are plummeting. Their sales are plummeting because everybody's saying, can you believe it? There's no ethics or anything involved here. So there's an ethical stance that need to be taken all over the shop. I'm beginning to sound like an evangelical.
Well, we did have a bit of the soul. So we've got the AGM coming up, second anniversary. What's the next stage of this?
We're waiting on the SFA responding to the letter. How do I put it? They know there'll be consequences if they don't respond. ultimately driving it, you know, from a point of view, what we would then be doing is what I said earlier, is going back to the support, not the Celtic support, but the support in Scottish football, and saying, look, we can let you see the stuff we've given in the SFA, we can give you the basis that we've gone with, we can give you everything we've got, and you've seen it, and it's pretty persuasive, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Right? We don't see how we can carry on to support an organisation that sits there and pretends none of that's happened, you know? So what we want is for you to either write to your MPs and say we want, I call it a judicial review, but we want a root and branch review of the way that the game's governed in this country, you know? And that'll make world news as well, because don't forget, everybody's wanting the same thing to happen with FIFA. So there's a sea change, there's a mood for that. So there is, you know. And this isn't to get to the SFA or to get to people there. Although people there who made mistakes are going to have to hold their hands up in a sense. But it's to actually say, what's this about? It's about the good of the game and making the game good.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And that's really what it's all about. And I just don't understand why folk can't see that. But I do. It's a tribal... It's the tribalism that prevents us recognising that we're all part of the same tribe at the end of the day.
But it's also that thing of my biggest disappointment with Scottish football is the thugs won. It's the narrative that now exists in the media about Rangers.
Aye.
The thugs won.
Well, I've picked up one or two bits in that, in the sense that, again, I'm having a go at the media, but what I have to say is that in terms of, it's not the individuals themselves, it's about, again, the culture that's there, because I'm pretty certain that the one or two that have sort of said either something here is that I'm going, they might be keen and they might want to do something, but if they're in the environment they're in, somebody up the top's going to say, oh, no, hang on a minute, that's going to affect our sales, we're not going to do that.
I also know of one journalist who I spoke to on a matter to do with Rangers who said, it's an old news story. I understand exactly what to do with them. Something. And he said, my editor wouldn't run with it. Because he would say, all that Rangers stuff, that's all in the past now.
Aye. But what we've been talking about now is that if you put it this way, you say it's all in the past, it's not in the sense that there's still stuff there that's toxic and it's festering and it's poisoning and it needs to be lanced. And there's nothing to be afraid of in attempting to lance it. Nobody's out for blood. In my case, nobody's after titles, you know. And if somebody says to me, we're going to change the game, the question of that is you draw a line under the rest of it. Personally, I would just say, if everybody knows what we've been on, I think maybe most of the Rangers supporters say, well, actually, at the end of the day, we probably, you know, they're not as valuable a title as we thought they were at the time. They might think that, they might know, I don't care, you know. All I want to see is a game that's honestly governed, what I do, and properly run professionally.
Okay, well, with that, and try not to have podcasts of more than an hour, so that's an hour. So
I just you're going to have a job there.
Oh,
I did not.
Thanks,
warn you.
Thanks very much. Cheers. Let me tell you
how it will be. I hope you found that podcast informative and enlightening. Certainly, what it does is let you know that the Resolution 12 guys haven't gone away. Hopefully Aldhead made it clear enough that there has been input from Celtic in what they were doing, and it's certainly not been that Celtic have discouraged them in any way, at least put it that way. What they're trying to achieve, well, Aldhead says he's not out for revenge, it's just about better governance for the future for Scottish football. The overriding thing is patently rules were not followed to a considerable degree. Whether that was intentional or not, I'll let you decide. But certainly the guidance from Bryson, as we know, in the Lord Nimmo Smith case is pretty clear. What he seems to be saying is, if you cheat and get away with it and then come clean, well done you, because the SFA didn't know you were cheating at the time. Seems a bit odd to me, but there you go. That's the SFA for you. As I say, hope you enjoyed that. Another podcast along in the next few days. But tonsillitis, throat laryngitis has kept me away from doing a podcast for the previous week or so, since the Arch McPherson one from St Anthony. Anyway, enough of me. Just one more thing to say. If you go on the Celtic FC Foundation website, you can be very proud of the work that the charity connected with our club undertakes with its Celtic Park created in Haiti, and obviously the work that it's doing for the refugee crisis that our politicians are ignoring. Anyway, enough from me. That was Altied, who has asked that I let it be known. If you have any questions resulting from this podcast, just tweet him at Altied on Twitter, and he will do his best to answer questions. This is me, Harry Brady, saying goodnight. Goodnight.